7 p.m. to 8 p.m. here on 99.5 FM, WBAI, New York. Now, usually at 8 o'clock, we have the Metropolitan Virtual Playhouse, but not to worry, they will be back next week. So until then, we're going to play Back of the Book, which is a program that's usually heard Saturday mornings. Once again, you're tuning into 99.5 FM, WBAI New York, and WBAI.org for all of our listeners on the web. Please stay tuned.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, okay, we went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It's probably something like around 5 a.m., and you're listening to All. He's on his way out, and he's still lying. Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty, hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things here, and you can find out a little bit more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can look around there. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame in the left-hand side of your screen that says Latest Back of the Book Program Links at the top of it. Click on that, and you'll get to the web page for tonight's program. We do a web page for each and every radio program. And the WBAI website and the archives appear to be functioning as far as we can tell. And the stream is working, so we're also on WBAI.org. So, This is our 17th pandemic episode of Back of the Book, pre-recorded for obvious reasons. Yeah, the two of us don't want to get killed by COVID-19, so we're staying in as much as possible. This program was recorded at various times, but largely on Friday afternoon for airing on Saturday morning. So if things have happened between then and now, we won't be referencing them on this program. Yeah, recorded program's not as up-to-date as a live program, and we just have to live with that. These are dangerous times. And because we're recording here at home, you're going to hear in the background the radiator hissing. We can't do anything about that. That's life. That's just going to be on this program. That's it. Our guest tonight will be our radiator. All right, let's see. The big news of the last fortnight is we are up to 102 followers on Twitter. Oh, man, oh, man. Jesus Christ, all those electrons accumulating from 102 listeners on Twitter. It's just weighing things down. I hear it's actually deforming the planet Earth a bit with that many electrons in one place. Also, we should note that the next public WBAI-LSB meeting should be held on Wednesday, December 9th, 2020 at 7 p.m., probably on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security, and they've had to cop to that and pay the feds a fine over it. We had an LSB meeting this past week, and it was, you know, sort of the usual meeting, and people wanting to reinvent the wheel to some degree. And, we'll see how that works out. But I don't think reinventing the wheel is... I don't think they're going to reinvent it too well. And as I've mentioned, we're staying home a lot. We're not going out much for obvious reasons, because it's dangerous for us, especially for me. I'm this old fart with all sorts of medical conditions. So the COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 53,126,651 on Friday. And deaths worldwide reached 1,312,339. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 10,642,218. And the death toll in America was 243,044, which means that more than 13,688 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures will be higher. And Trump continues to be the disease vector in chief. He held these packed, maskless rallies all over the place in an effort to get reelected. And he finished up his campaign with 14 jam-packed rallies in 7 states in just the last 3 days before the election. Yeah, paying no attention to the health and safety of the morons who showed up to cheer him on, which is what it's all about, his ego. And so he had all those extra rallies right before the election. And now the Washington Post is reporting that more than 130 U.S. Secret Service agents, whose job it is to protect the president, have been forced into quarantine because they either tested positive for COVID-19 or were in close contact with coworkers who did. This is what he's doing. He's just making a lot of people sick. Plus, we have the figure that he's had... a huge number of people from his rallies get sick, and a whole bunch of them die. God, well, a malignant narcissist does not care about the lives of other people when it compares to, say, his ego being stroked. His ego is far more important than the lives of everybody else in the world. So, the disease vector in chief marches on. Of course, the disease vector in chief, Trump, lost the election. Woohoo! Wee! Okay, we're very glad to hear that noise. We were glad to hear it a week ago, Saturday morning. And, oh, man, we were hanging out saying, where is this going? I even posted a little joke up on my Twitter feed. It's a joke relating to a Mary Tyler Moore Show episode, God, 50 years ago. And, it, you know, where they had a failure of electricity or something. It was a big snowstorm. And so they had the same tally for an election that they were going live to cover. And they spent like 10 hours with the same tally. And it felt like, well, it was more than 10 hours. It was like 4 or 5 days we were there with the same tally of Biden 253, Trump either 213 or 214, depending on who was calling it. But we're very glad to note that this got reconciled a week ago. And not everybody's accepting this. Yes, the Biden-Harris ticket got 77,971,073 votes. One of those is mine. And the Trump-Pence ticket got 72,653,384 votes. And most importantly, as we know these days, the Biden-Harris ticket has so far won 290 electoral college votes. And this afternoon, just before we start recording this, they're calling all the other votes. And it now looks like Biden-Harris is going to get 306 electoral votes, which will definitely crush Trump. And it's actually the same vote total in electoral college that Trump got the last time I've heard on TV today. And we're very glad about this. And Trump was making noises about how unfair the election was to him because people were voting by mail before Election Day, even though Trump himself has voted by mail for years. So far, almost every legal challenge he's made to the election results has been thrown out of court. Today on TV, they said that's 12 of them. He's been rejected 12 times. And he did, as I recall, he did get one thing that he won, but it didn't affect the vote. It made it so that his people were moved a little bit closer to the people doing the tallying. And he's still complaining about it. And so he's still screaming and yelling that, oh, it's a rigged election. And I won. He actually went out and said, I won this election. Yeah, really, it's not going to work out. The thing is, he's going to court with nothing. And he's being laughed out of court, pretty much. And part of his problem is that he's saying that the Democrats rigged the election so that Biden and Harris would win. However, if the Democrats had done that, then they'd have rigged it so the Republicans would have lost the Senate and would not have made gains in the House. And both of those things did not happen. The Republicans appear to still have the Senate, and they made gains in the House. And he's been unable to bring up any evidence of widespread election rigging. The biggest thing was an affidavit from a guy in Pennsylvania who then turned around and said, oh, I was lying. One Republican operative was claiming fraud, obvious fraud, because he saw so many military votes going to Biden and Harris when active duty military people usually vote conservative. Well, you know, maybe Trump mocking the American war dead and calling them losers and suckers had some effect on that, eh? The actually dangerous thing, of course, that Trump may be trying to affect is the Electoral College vote. He may be trying to infiltrate what are called faithless electors into there. Now, the people who are in the Electoral College, they're elected from the state, and they're elected for each candidate, and they're pledged to vote for one candidate, but they are called faithless electors if they vote for the other candidate or some other candidate. And this has happened in the past, and there's talk going around of some states that have majority Republican legislatures vote in nothing but Trump supporters who would then vote for Trump when they're supposed to vote for Biden. And this is what some people are saying could be the last ditch effort by Trump to steal this election. However, there's a Supreme Court ruling from July that would indicate that those faithless electors would be replaced. However, doing this could result in a really big constitutional crisis if Trump manages to do something like this, or if one of the nasty red states decides it's going to try and pull this kind of a trick. I should think there would be serious personal, possibly permanent repercussions on this. Now, we have had faithless electors in the past. In fact, one person, I think it was in 1972, refused to vote for Richard M. Nixon when he was supposed to, when he voted for some third party candidate. And the big one occurred in Virginia in 1836. There was an election, and there was a presidential election. Now, in those days, you had an election for the president and vice president, and it was a little bit different from today. And so the Virginia electors did not like the guy running for vice president. The reason why was because the slave he was sleeping with, he treated as an actual mistress, and he had kids with her. And you know, this is a thing that happened in the South a lot. But he was different. Instead of just saying she's a slave and she goes out over there, we don't care, he went places with her. He treated her nicely. He treated her like any mistress. And they were furious at this. This violated their Southern temperament. And so they voted for the president as they were supposed to, but then they voted for the opposite party for vice president. This resulted in a tie. So what happens when you get a tie in the Electoral College is it goes to the Senate. Oh, good grief these days, eh? And so it went to the Senate, and the Senate was with the same party as the vice president, so they just all voted him in, and it all came out okay for that guy. But the thing is, this was actually done by all the electors from Virginia in 1836, and I'm hoping that we're not going to see another kind of thing like this in 2020. I mean, it's a long time ago, and it's almost 200 years ago, but we could end up with that stuff going on. Oh man, this is nutty. I do want to say it was very amusing, the Four Seasons landscaping silliness after the election. And of course, it became obvious. It was obvious on election night that Trump was lost. And so he sends out Rudy Giuliani with some Republican operatives. They're going to hold a big, important announcement about the election, and they're going to fight it, and they have all this legal stuff. They're really going to knock out the Democrats who are cheating. How this would work, by the way, I don't know, because after you count them, they don't, you know, number the ballots and say, this came from that guy, this came from that guy. They just throw them in a heap, essentially, not a literal heap. It's neater than that. But how do you go back and undo those ballots? So it's going to be held, their big Rudy Giuliani thing is going to be held at the Four Seasons. Turns out it looked like it meant it was going to be the Four Seasons Hotel, but they couldn't get that. So they ended up standing in front of a place called the Four Seasons Total Landscaping Incorporated. And it's so comical. This is supposed to be so important and big. And they're standing in a parking lot, actually outside the business. And they have garage doors in back of them, which they have decided to decorate. They've put up Trump posters. But you can still, it's obviously still a garage door. And it was really, really stupid and so comical and really so typical of what Rudy Giuliani has been doing with his spare time these days. But oh, that was silly. That was very silly. The votes were very close. The votes were very close in a number of states. And it is possible that a third party candidate may have had some effect on this. I'm not sure yet. Clemson University psychology lecturer Joe Jorgensen ran on the Libertarian Party ticket. and she may have had an influence on the election. I only have numbers from a week ago, but they show that the Libertarian candidate got more than 76,000 votes in Pennsylvania, about 61,000 votes in Georgia, almost 45,000 votes in Arizona. The up-to-date total I have is that she got 1,783,519 votes. She got 1.7, almost 1.8 million votes in a tight election. Now, in terms of popular votes, yeah, she's way off. But in terms of those particular states, tens of thousands of votes in each state, she may have made a difference. Certainly if those votes had gone to Trump, which some people say libertarian voters would probably have gone for, he might well have won this election. Wow. This wheel is still in spin. It's something that will be figured out in a bit. But it's interesting how close things can come sometimes. Last Sunday, the day after media outlets finally called the election for Biden-Harris, Trump campaign director of communications Tim Murtaugh tweeted an image that purported to be taken at campaign headquarters in Virginia of multiple front pages of the Washington Times with the headline, quote, President Gore, unquote, a reference to the contested presidential election of the year 2000. When, in fact, they had all these disputes and all sorts of bad stuff, Gore once again scored more popular votes, but it came down to Florida and hanging chads and pregnant chads and the Supreme Court stepping in to choose a president. Very bad. And in the end, of course, Bush ended up being president. So, oh, yeah, look at this. See that? President Gore. So Murtaugh tweets, greetings, staff at Team Trump headquarters this morning. A reminder that the media doesn't select the president, unquote. So he writes that, referencing everybody saying, you know, Biden's the winner, guys. Problem was, the front page declaring that Al Gore had won the election in the year 2000 was fake. The Washington Times, referenced by the Republicans, informed Trump campaign director of communications Murtaugh that the front page was not real. Quote, those photos have been doctored. The Washington Times never ran a President Gore headline, unquote, the newspaper replied to Murtaugh on Twitter. Quote, we also wish to add that Mr. Murtaugh has been officially notified via email about this error, unquote. And Murtaugh then deleted his tweet. Shows how low they go and how divorced from reality they can be. And they just cheat, not to be trusted. So with all of this, with the insane stuff about whether he's going to stay in there or not, his declaration that he's won when he's obviously lost, his refusal to concede the election, it's still pretty crazy stuff. And as we've been doing for all these years now, we want everyone to remember that the Trump administration's behavior is not normal. We must keep telling ourselves this is not normal. None of this is normal. And if we do that, we can save our own sanity, I think, and deal with that. And oh, good grief. Trump administration's behavior is not normal. We just have to keep that in front of us. This is not normal. Speaking of things that are difficult to deal with psychologically, like this, Pickles of the North has a few things to say. So we're going to hand it over to Pickles of the North.
Yes. These past several months have been very stressful. And with the election happening, it sort of supercharged the stress. At least for me, it did. I'm sure for many millions of other people here and around the world, it has done that too. And one of the ways I calm myself down when my brain starts thinking about all the terrible things that could happen and are happening is I read out loud to myself. So I have been reading a variety of things. Some of them are comic books, very relaxing and fun. Things like, a Star Trek cookbook, perhaps. Lately, though, during the counting of the votes, I've been reading Beowulf. There's some interesting similarities that are in the story of Beowulf to what is going on right now. And I'd just like to read you a short excerpt from it. And this version of Beowulf is Beowulf, a prose translation by David Wright, who's a poet. It's Penguin Classics, copyright 1957, and this edition was a reprint from 1975. This is from very close to the very beginning of this epic poem written in the 8th century, and we don't know who wrote it. We're not sure if it's a person or more than one person, but anonymous, I guess. Beowulf. And the person we're going to be speaking about, if you have never read Beowulf, there's a king, and his name is Hrothgar. And this is about him and a project that he had. Such success in arms and so great a fame attended Hrothgar that his kinsmen were eager to serve under him. And in this way, the number of his young retainers increased until he had a formidable army. It came into his mind to command the erection of a building that should be the greatest banqueting hall ever known, in which he could apportion to young and old everything that God had entrusted to him, with the exception of public lands and human life. So, as I have heard, orders were dispatched all over the world for its furbishing, and in a short time the enormous building was completed. The king called it Heorot, and kept his promise at the feast, where he distributed rings and treasure. Tall and wide-gabled, the hall towered overhead. Yet it was to endure terrible and leaping flames when in the course of time a deadly feud between Hrothgar and his son-in-law should be kindled by an act of violence. You find out about this later on in the epic poem. It's something that happens in the future. We continue. At that time, a mighty fiend who lived in the darkness suffered greatly. Their happiness, which he heard daily, resounding from the hall, grated on his ear. The harp music and clear song of a poet relating the creation of man from the earliest times, how God made the world, a shining plain encircled by the sea, and through his power established the sun and moon to light its inhabitants. How he decked the face of the earth with leaves and branches, and besides gave life to all that moves. In this way the fighting men were happily living, until the fiend from hell began to work them mischief. The grim demon was called Grendel, a notorious ranger of the borderlands, who inhabited the fastnesses of moors and fens. This unhappy being had long lived in the land of monsters, because God had damned him along with the children of Cain. For the eternal Lord avenged the killing of Abel. He took no delight in that feud, but banished Cain from humanity because of his crime. From Cain were hatched all evil progenies, ogres, hobgoblins, and monsters, not to mention the giants who fought so long against God, for which they suffered due retribution. At nightfall, Grendel set out to visit the great hall to see how the Danes had settled down in it after they had finished drinking. He found a band of soldiers sleeping after a banquet, dead to care and human misery. Savage, exasperated, the grim and greedy demon was ready in a trice. He pounced on 30 men where they slept. Then, glutted with slaughter, he went home to his lair, exulting over his spoil. By daybreak, the ferocity of Grendel was clear to everyone. A great cry went up in the morning. Lamentation followed the revels. The famous king felt keenly for his retainers when the tracks of the fiend were discovered and fell prey to grief. The struggle was too harsh, evil, and unremitting, for there was no respite. But the next night, Grendel, without the least scruple, he was too much bent on such things, committed further mischief and murder. Soon it was easy enough to find a man who looked for sleeping quarters farther off, or for a bed in the outbuildings, once the glaring evidence of the enmity of Herorot's last henchman became manifest. Whoever escaped from the fiend took care to keep out of harm's way afterwards. In this way, Grendel held the upper hand and fought against right, alone against everyone, until the great hall stood derelict. This went on for a long time. For 12 years, the king of the Danes suffered all kinds of misery and distress. Sorrowful ballads spread to all quarters the news that Grendel was on the warpath, waging year after year a murderous and interminable feud with Hrothgar. He would make no peace with any of the Danish host, nor would he be bought off. Neither could any of the counselors expect lavish compensation at the hands of the killer. But the demon, a black shadow of death, prowled, lay in ambush, and plotted against young and old. Night after night he patrolled the fog-bound moors. Who can say where such demons may range in their wanderings? That was an excerpt from Beowulf. And that's the way I think we've been feeling a lot these past 4 years.
Well, thank you, Pickles of the North. Yeah, that kind of relates to things that have been happening and are still happening right now. So, oh, man. And we have a big announcement here on this radio program. It's an earth-shattering announcement. It will affect the entire multiverse. This radio program, Back of the Book, goes weekly as of this program. Yeah, we've been in talking with the interim program director, and she wanted us to go weekly for a while. We said, oh, I'm not sure about this, because we've been not doing it weekly for a long time. And we agreed this past week, and our announcement is we are starting going weekly. That means that we'll be back 1 week from now. And this should make it easier for listeners to find us. So this program is going to air weekly starting today. And Back of the Book has been on the air for more than 34 years. In that time, we've been on bi-weekly, except for when we've been preempted sometimes. And sometimes we got preempted a hell of a lot. So this is going to be a big change for us and for our listeners, too, I think. And this should make it much easier for those who listen to this radio program regularly, the few of you there are, to find us. It's a lot easier to remember 5 o'clock on a Saturday morning than 5 o'clock on an alternate Saturday mornings. And we've had listeners telling us that and complaining about being hard to find the program for all 34 years we've been on the air. So this is going to be a challenge. This is going to be something of a challenge here because I'm, we've been doing it bi-weekly and that sort of gets into there. And it's not that there's not enough stuff to talk about, but it's going to be a challenge to me, especially with regard to adapting from a bi-weekly routine to a weekly routine. Instead of summing up a fortnight, going to have to sum up a week, which is what most things do. But, you know, we've been the odd creatures here doing things fortnightly. And we're going to try to adapt and do our best. And I think the following excerpt from the short story The Dead from James Joyce's book Dubliners kind of gets close to my concerns. In this story, people are waiting around for cabs after a party, and one guy tells the following story. And I'm wondering if I'm the horse named Johnny in this story. It goes like this, quote, "The old gentleman had a horse by the name of Johnny, and Johnny used to work in the old gentleman's mill, walking round and round in order to drive the mill. That was all very well, but now comes the tragic part about Johnny. One fine day, the old gentleman thought he'd like to drive out with the quality to a military review in the park. So the old gentleman harnessed Johnny and put on his very best tall hat and his very best stock collar and drove out in grand style from his ancestral mansion somewhere near Back Lane, I think. So out from the mansion of his forefathers he drove with Johnny, and everything went on beautifully until Johnny came in sight of King Billy's statue. And whether he fell in love with the horse King Billy sits on, or whether he thought he was back again in the mill, anyhow, he began to walk round the statue. Round and round he went, and the old gentleman, who was a very pompous old gentleman, was highly indignant.
"Go on, sir! What do you mean, sir? Johnny, Johnny! Most extraordinary conduct! Can't understand the horse!"
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe I'm going to be like Johnny and have a hard time adapting to doing it weekly. But we'll see. We'll try. We'll throw it in there and jump around, and we hope we can do it. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from an antenna atop four Times Square, being fed from a studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn, and being pre-recorded in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. We are also streaming live at WBAI.org, and at WBAI.org there are also archives. All right, and now we should pitch. We need to pitch and say, hey, folks, look, this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and we are listener-sponsored non-commercial radio. That means we don't have commercials. We have to rely on you, the listeners, to support us. And what happens is now these days we get on every program and we pitch for what are called BAI buddies. And a BAI buddy is a sustaining member. When you're a BAI buddy, you say, hey, I want to support WBAI, and you can take a monthly amount of money out of my credit card or off my debit card. And this is how it works. So what you do is you call 1-516-620-3602 and tell them you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And tell them how much you want taken out every month. And you get to choose that, of course. You can have $5 a month taken out, $5 or $10 or $15 or $20, more if you want. But I think the $5 to $20 range is pretty much what most of our listeners can handle. And so you tell them you want to do that. And you also tell them what day of the month you want it taken out so that it doesn't collide with any other bills or anything. And so that is it. And they will automatically debit your debit card or your credit card, and you will be donating to WBAI every single month. And if you donate $5 a month, that means you're contributing $60 a year to WBAI. If you do $10 a month, you're contributing $120 a year to BAI, and on and on. And so we're asking you to please do that. Now, we're also wondering if maybe some people, we haven't gotten a lot of replies to being BAI buddies, so we're wondering if some people might really prefer to donate a lump sum at one time. You can do that too. You can call 1-516-620-3602. That's 1-516-620-3602 and say you want to become a BAI buddy. And have your credit card or debit card details ready and be ready to say how much you want to donate. Again, if a whole bunch of people do $5 a month, that's going to be really good, and that will help us out. It'll especially help us out since we're now going weekly and we got to show that there's a listenership here, and that would be really a necessity. 1-516-620-3602, and we need to have a bunch of people. Now, of course, we are not in the studio anymore because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Even if there weren't officially a lockdown, even if the station weren't officially closed to just everybody, we would have to stay home because it's pretty deadly stuff for me. I'm ancient, and I have a number of pre-existing conditions which could really get me killed fast. So I'm hanging around here. I figure, Pickles and I figure, that I will not be able to go out and do a live radio program again until maybe next April. Yeah, maybe around then. We'll have to see. We'll see how this works out. And so we're asking, we can't tell who's calling in. We can't see what a tally is. So we can't specifically thank anyone, and we're sorry for that. But we can ask you to please call 1-516-620-3602, pledge some amount of money, and say you want to become a BAI buddy. So there is that. Again, $5 a month as a sustaining member, a BAI buddy, or $5, $10, $15, $20 a month. And you at $20 a month, you're donating $240 a year to BAI. And BAI will really be glad about that. But BAI will also be glad if a bunch of you contribute $5 a month. So 1-516-620-3602. And please, please, if you could possibly see your way clear to either becoming a BAI buddy or making some kind of a lump sum donation to the station right now, that would really help. Management is watching this. They're watching this closely. They're especially going to see how we do since we're going to be weekly now. They want to see, are people going to be glad to hear that? Yeah. So, okay. 516-620-3602, and we're really hoping that some of you are calling in right now and saying you want to be a BAI buddy for Back of the Book. Won't you be our buddy? And again, $5 to $20, somewhere in there, you pick the amount of money you want taken out every month, and you pick the date on which they'll take the donation. 1-516-620-3602 is the number to call, and we hope that a whole bunch of you are calling, especially since we've just given you some good news, I hope. I hope you want to hear us every week. We'll see what happens with that. Okay, so we've got this big announcement in this past fortnight, not just the fact that Biden and Harris have been elected and Trump has been diselected, but also the company Pfizer says it's got a vaccine and it's just about ready and it's 90% effective, and they're pushing this. And so that could be the big deal. Now, there are other vaccines coming up through the testing process, and we'll see how that works. And yes, I know some people are going to scream about Big Pharma, Big Pharma. Who else is going to make the vaccines and the drugs? It costs a lot of money, and it's got to be Big Pharma. It's not going to be some politically correct guy in his backyard producing something that will save my life. And also, of course, I know that there are people who listen to BAI who are what are referred to as anti-vaxxers. Which, by the way, is also a QAnon position. I see it's a QAnon position to be anti-vaccine. By the way, two QAnon people got elected to Congress. This is like crazy stuff. How are they going to behave? Well, they're going to behave like right-wing idiots, total right-wing idiots. And we'll just have to hope they get crushed by the others. And yeah, QAnon is this bizarre, totally insane-seeming thing where, oh, there's this person named Q who's anonymous, who has inside information about the satanic cults, which includes the Democratic Party, fighting against President Trump. This is what they really think. And by the way, John Voight didn't say anything about Q being a QAnon person, but he came up with the same stuff during the election of saying, yes, we have to fight against Satan. We have to elect Trump. Otherwise, Satan will take over. Completely nuts. I mean, wow. Some of these celebrities just are out of their goddamn minds. Anyway, so yes, it is interesting that certain left-wing people are very anti-vaccine, and they coincide with some very right-wing people that are apparently very anti-vaccine. And by the way, I'm seeing something about how QAnon is, that whole crowd of crazy people, are kind of a little bit concerned right now because Q, I guess, I don't know, I don't follow this thing that well, but apparently Q isn't making pronouncements anymore, and some of the QAnon nutcases are saying, have we been had? Because maybe somebody was just pulling their leg all this time.
Well, maybe he went back to the continuum.
Ah, well, Pickles of the North with a Star Trek reference. Anyway, I'm not going to explain that one. But anyway, yeah, so this vaccine, this is the first of the vaccines who looks like it's, that looks like it's very close. So we'll be seeing how that works. And we had to wait around a while before we did the last bit of today's recordings. And again, this is being recorded on what is now Friday afternoon. And it's going to be airing for you on Saturday morning at 5. But we said, well, we got to wait and see what Trump is going to do, because there was supposed to be a 4 o'clock in the afternoon press conference from Trump. Stupid creep showed up half an hour late. I guess he's used to letting people hang around for half an hour while he dithers. In any event, so he has this press conference, and in it, basically, he's claiming credit for the Pfizer vaccine. This is really bizarre. And yeah, Pfizer did it, and they're part of Operation Warp Speed. But oh, they made an incorrect reference, and they said they weren't, but they are. They're not. And apparently, what happened was with this Warp Speed thing, the government is funding some pharmaceutical houses to do a vaccine, and they've been setting this up, and the military is handling batching it, because when you batch a vaccine, you have these huge vats that you make it up in, and then it goes into the little vials eventually. And what has happened is that the government, the federal government, did agree to buy a whole lot of vaccinations from Pfizer. So they did that, but that doesn't mean that Pfizer is a part of Warp Speed. So he was lying about that. And he's claiming credit for it. He also is attacking New York State because he's saying, oh, Cuomo doesn't want, we'll send it out to everybody except New York State because Cuomo doesn't want it. I'm sure that Cuomo is making a statement regarding this, but we can't keep delaying recording this because after we record this, we have to edit it because otherwise you'll hear us, you know, fumfering about and passing gas and coughing all over the place. So we have to edit these things. So right now we do not have the time to see what Cuomo's going to say, but I'm sure he's going to say something. And of course, Trump was lying.
What Cuomo has said was that the distribution of the vaccine was going to be horrific under this current administration, where it was going to go to the big chain pharmacies. It sounds like it was going to cost money. And in order to get the vaccine, they were requiring the states to send paperwork back telling them if there were any people who were undocumented getting the vaccine. So I can understand, you know, New York State saying, wait a minute, not against the vaccine, but against the whole process, which sounds inept. And I'm glad that's not going to happen, because April, May, June is going to be far away from December and the beginning of January.
Yeah, so Trump has tried to bring his anti-immigrant stuff over to even the humanitarian necessity of vaccinating people against a disease. You know, show me your papers and all of this. So, Jesus Christ. But anyway, I'm sure Cuomo is going to have some cogent remarks on this, but he's not doing it in time to get on the air with us. So there is that. And we want to note that after a while, he started fumfering about, and he seemed like drifting. Oh, he also said, whatever administration it is. First, he said our administration, and then he said, oh, whatever administration gives these. So maybe that's a little break in his constant thing of he's going to be it. And what was it? Was it Pompeo or one of them who said, oh, we're getting ready for the transition to the second Trump administration, which some people say was a joke, and some people say maybe he wasn't joking. Maybe they really have imbibed that much of the Trump Kool-Aid that they're going to try and say they're going to be back in January. However, January 20th should see a new administration. And one of the things that's going to happen is, I'm sure that right now, maybe for the past 4 years, people in the Democratic Party, part of the transition, have been making note of what executive orders Trump has issued. And, you know, some executive orders are going to be like executive order to say, oh, it's good that World War II is over. You know, that's okay. They're going to see what bad ones are in there. And they're going to make note of those. And what can happen is that on January 20th, just as last time, 4 years ago, the first thing Trump did was go into the White House, sit down at a small writing desk and sign, I forget what it was, some executive order. You would see Biden going in and signing an executive order that will say the following executive orders, and they all have numbers. So they could just reference a number. The following executive orders are hereby rescinded, and in one signature, just wipe out probably hundreds, at least hundreds, of awful executive orders from Trump. And that will be a very, very good thing, I think. Okay. And so, yes, there is all of that. It should be noted, all of the TV stations pulled away from him when he started fumfering about and going into other things. And they said, oh, he's lost the thread. He just wants to stand up there and be adulated as usual. They pulled away and started fact-checking him, which is really the good thing. And the ultimate fact-check will be coming on January 20th. That'll be so good. Because I don't think that even with trying to pull the faithless electors thing, that he's going to be able to pull this out. Because the final, they announced after his press conference, the final tally is now 306 for Biden-Harris and 232 for Trump-Pence. So even if they were able to screw around with some of those ballots, they can't take that away. All right. Well, at this point, I have to say, please pledge. I didn't pledge enough, pitch enough here. This is WBAI New York, and we need you to pitch. Call one. We need you to pledge. 1-516-620-3602. We're going weekly. We're going weekly. That should motivate listeners to call in a pledge to 1-516-620-3602 and say, yes, we want to see Back of the Book stay on the air, and we want to see WBAI stay on the air as well. So 1-516-620-3602, become a BAI buddy, and I think they will also take an ordinary pledge if you want, a one-time lump sum pledge. I'm sure will be welcome. I don't think the station is refusing to accept money. All right, I think that's been it for Back of the Book for this fortnight. Next week in this time slot will be us! Oh, we've never been able to say that before. Next week in this time slot will be us. Coming up next is Ralph Nader's program. Coming up at 7 o'clock after Ralph Nader will be Jim Freund with his program Hour of the Wolf, all about science fiction stuff. And Jim had been alternating with us in this time slot, and now he's weekly also at 7 a.m. on Saturdays. We're on at 5 a.m. Saturdays. And Jim is on at 7 a.m. Saturdays, and we sandwich Ralph Nader. I wonder how Ralph Nader feels about that. Anyway, all right. Thanks a hell of a lot for listening, And we're going to be back here in a week. It's going to be kind of strange. And we're very glad about the election. And you should look out the window at the nice fall foliage in some places. What hasn't been blasted off the trees already by the rain. And take care of yourselves. Hold out so you can get a vaccine and not get killed by this thing. And we're going to have our long national nightmare end, I think, in January. And above all, remember what that watching out for Grendel Dormouse said.
In your head and dead on your feet, well, another crazy day. You'll drink the night away and forget about everything. This city desert makes you feel so cold. It's got so many people, but it's got no soul, and it's taking you so long to find out you were wrong when you thought it held everything. You used to think that
hey, everybody, this is Stu Cutler. I listen to WBAI 99.5 in New York. And when I'm on tour, I listen to WBAI.org on the web.
Hey, this is Fernando.
This is Gabriel.
And I'm Nick.
And we are WBAI interns
on a mission to recruit more BAI buddies to support our station.
A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a reoccurring monthly donation to WBAI. It's safe, secure, simple, automatic, and means a great deal to keeping our unique essential programming on the air.
To become a BAI buddy, just go to WBAI.org to sign up. Or, if you prefer to sign up through the phone, you may call our call center at 516-620-3602.
Once you join, you will receive a BAI buddy card that allows you to take advantages of member benefits and special opportunities both on and off air, plus a tote bag.
Questions? Just email buddy at WBAI.org. And remember, your support helps keep us on the air.
He's cool. He's exciting.
This dude is bad.
He's sexy. Okay, maybe not. He's a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
He's Tony Ryan. On WBAI New York 99.5 FM. He's got both.
Break him with the sound of the trumpet.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
He's got classic soul. He's okay, I can't think of anything else.
I'm Tony Ryan. Tune in Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Soul Central Station with Tony Ryan.
99.5 WBAI.
This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels. The Institute of the Black World 21st Century's Black Family Summit proudly announces the Community Cares Listening Line for Black First Responders and Essential Workers. We're here and we're listening. The Community Cares Listening Line is a free, confidential service staffed with responsive volunteers who can provide emotional support and share information with our callers. If you're feeling anxious, afraid, distressed, burdened, or overwhelmed by a range of emotions, please call the Community Cares Listening Line at 877-719-1117. That's 877-719-1117.
Extinction Diaries. The connection between humans and animals is now better understood since a Tel Aviv University study focused on the effect extinct species have on humans. It was revealed that hunter-gatherers are emotionally connected with their prey, maybe more after extinction. In Europe, 40,000-year-old engravings portray animals like mammoths and seals that were already long extinct in the artist's lifetime. Perhaps the artist was longing to revive the partnership his ancestors described. Studying modern societies, we understand meaning or significance in ancient animal art. Indigenous cultures worldwide express a deep loyalty to an animal partnership and a responsibility to that animal or an entire ecosystem, like a forest. There is also guilt when there is a loss that could have been avoided or a species that needed to be defended. Our deep connectedness with animals shines in the fight to save the Amazon forest, where defenders are being murdered at a shocking rate. Perhaps ancient cave art is the work of the first highest evolved human,